for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week, Business Person of the Year. In a tough time for restaurants, Georgios Bakatsis flourishes with a touch of class and an eye for detail. We'll start this week with the biz section, then we'll read the reporter pages, and then the cover story. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. His main story this week is about Garner. Garner clings to charm amid changes. The town of Garner is surging and seeking to keep its identity as it does. It's a familiar story in the Triangle as growth changes crossroads and cow pastures into shopping centers and swank homes. But Garner has always had a distinctive character and a hard-working heritage, personified by an epic state football championship in 1987. But that local feel is changing. The Garner population was 31,159 according to the 2020 census, and is now more than 40,000. Even by Triangle standards, that's a staggering jump. But we still want to feel like a small town in the best ways, said Mayor Buddy Gupton, who grew up in Garner himself. Maintaining an identity while adding amenities is his priority. Even Gupton said Garner's downtown has been at a low water level for a long time. But now he said the downtown has a second wind with a new recreation center, 24 townhomes being built, and the huge Villages at Garner Station on the way. We want to emphasize that our downtown is a symbol of our history, Gupton said. Garner residents, as Gupton pointed out, are closer to the state capital than many who live in Raleigh, and the extension of 540 that opened in September gives Garner easy access to Research Triangle Park. Also on the way is the E District, a 225-acre project near the intersection of I-40 and Highway 70 being developed by Raleigh's Wycliffe Development. Wake Med plans to build a 45-bed acute care hospital and 150-bed mental health and well-being hospital on roughly 56 acres of the site, a plan going through the town's approval process now. More development will follow on the rest of the land with a chance for upscale amenities that Gupton said could be transformative for the town. I believe this will create the unique identity, not a small town, but a small town with character, he said. The Wake Med facility will add to commitments from Duke Health and the Veterans Administration that will significantly upgrade the health care facilities in the town. We want to be a place where people can work with good jobs, where they can get the medical attention they need, nice grocery stores, nice restaurants, and still maintain a unique sense of place, Gupton said. Chocolatier is launching a new golf venture. This is on New Bern Avenue. A Raleigh entrepreneur who's had a hit with the Vedere Chocolate Factory is taking a swing at the indoor golf club and lounge. Golf 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 is now open at 605 New Bern Avenue in a 1,500-square-foot space. The venue is decked out with two hitting bays complete with TrackMan golf simulators and an indoor putting green. In addition to golf, the venue has a full bar serving beer, wine, spirits, and non-alcoholic drinks. Golf 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 is the brainchild of Sam Ratto, Vedere's owner and head chocolate maker at Vedere Chocolate Factory. The location on New Bern Avenue is gaining new traction with other entertainment businesses, as the owners of Noose River Brewing Company are opening a new beer bar called Blotto at 1601 New Bern Avenue. Novello to add two international flights from RDU. Startup carrier Avelo Airlines is launching two new nonstop flights out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, and you may want to grab your sunscreen. Starting in 2025, Avelo will fly to both Montego Bay, Jamaica, and Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. The new flights are part of a statewide expansion for the carrier, which launched its initial RDU flights in 2022. The move continues RDU's addition of international flights with connections to Frankfurt, Germany, and Panama City, complementing high-profile flights such as those to London and Paris. Avelo CEO Andrew Levy noted the appeal for his airline was that RDU is lacking in leisure-oriented flights to international destinations and praised Avelo's low-price appeal. In other airline news, a new Vancouver route is to provide gateway to Asia. Raleigh-Durham International Airport continues to land international connections, and a new one with Air Canada offers interesting possibilities. RDU will add an Air Canada flight to Vancouver, Canada in June. Alexandra Lefevre, Air Canada's Vice President for Network Planning in North America, said the route offers easier leaps to major markets in Asia, such as Seoul, Hong Kong, and Taipei, Taiwan. On average, 50 people are flying to Vancouver via connections out of RDU right now, a good baseline, Lefevre said, and much of the traffic is to Asian connections. He sees the Vancouver flight as an easier way to reach places such as Korea and Japan. And finally, East End Market beefs up with new tenants. Three new tenants have signed on to Raleigh's East End Market as the new development continues to beef up. Ferguson Enterprises has signed a lease for 21,199 square feet in the former common desk space at 2020 Progress Court and plans to take possession of the space in January. Also coming is dance studio Raleigh Dance and Tumble and sauna and cold plunge studio Mind Zero, which has two locations in South Carolina. Turning now to the reporter pages, the real estate and development section is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. Apartments part of $845 million sale. A New York developer has bought a Chapel Hill apartment complex as part of a larger portfolio deal topping $800 million. Brookfield Properties paid $74.8 million for the Crosstown at Chapel Hill Apartments located near the interchange for Interstate 40 and Highway 54. The property purchase was part of an 8-property acquisition in North Carolina, Ohio, Arizona, and Nevada. Brookfield acquired the portfolio from Blackstone Real Estate Income Trust for $845 million. This marks the company's first venture into both Arizona and Nevada. Its other North Carolina purchase was an apartment community in Charlotte. Representatives from Brookfield Properties were unavailable for comment. The multifamily sector has been gaining steam in terms of transactions since the Fed started lowering interest rates, but rent growth remains stagnant in the Triangle. Apartments across town at Chapel Hill rent for between $1,105 and $1,775. Unit interiors include a fireplace, stainless steel appliances, washer and dryer, and private patios or balconies. Amenities available for restaurants include a swimming pool, cabanas, hammocks, outdoor lounge with fire pit, tennis court, dog park, community pond with fountain, fitness center, and game room. There are 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units spread across 33-story buildings. The complex was built in 1990 and has 411 units. Various improvements have been made over the years, including updating the units. Crosstown at Chapel Hill is on 38.5 acres at 6123 and 6205 Farrington Road, which is a combined assessed value of approximately $44.7 million. Chapel Hill has been bustling with more development activity lately, including the Chapel Hill Police Department moving into a new headquarters, Proximo opening on Franklin Street, and a 340-unit build-to-rent community planned near Chapel Hill Country Club. Developer grabs land for $1 million per acre. A Raleigh developer has spent nearly $20 million on land in the Durham-Chapel Hill corridor for a multifamily project. Northwood Raven acquired 19.29 acres on Farrington Road just west of Interstate 40. The developer paid about $19.2 million total for the property, according to Durham County deed records. The land will be used for residential project with up to 415 apartments, townhomes, and detached homes. At Farrington Road, we're especially eager for the opportunity to provide a variety of housing types for the Durham community, said Kyle Whitaker, development partner for Northwood Raven. In addition to apartments, Farrington Road will also include both townhomes and detached homes, all designed and constructed to the highest standards in the market. The developer bought the 4 parcels in 2 separate transactions. It paid about $9.9 million for 5216 and 5304 Farrington Road and $9.2 million for 5218 and 5300 Farrington Road. In September, the Durham City Council unanimously passed an annexation and rezoning for the property that allows up to 415 rental units. The rezoning went from residential suburban 20 to planned development residential. The developer committed to making at least 5% of the units affordable to people making 80% or less of the area median income for 30 years and adding turn lanes and a 10-foot-wide shared path along the west side of Farrington Road. Construction is set to start in 2025 with delivery in 2027. In West Raleigh, condos to rise near Lenovo Center. A luxury custom home builder is targeting West Raleigh for new condominiums as that part of the city is set for a remake. Legacy Custom Homes has filed new site plans with the city for the Reprise, a 52-unit condo community, townhome-style condos, near the Lenovo Center and Carter Finley Stadium. The custom units will be along Nowell Road, north of Highway 54 and east of Interstate 40. Site plans show the three-story condos will have three bedrooms. Legacy's three-bedroom, three-story condos on New Bern Avenue go for $535,000. The listing price of these condos is unclear. That area is set to be transformed into an entertainment district. Construction on the first phase is scheduled to start in late 2025, but a rezoning request is still under review with the city. The Reprise will be on five parcels, 959, 961, and 965 Nowell Road, and two unaddressed parcels on Corporate Center Drive. The site has a combined assessed value of about $2.77 million. The parcels were rezoned in early 2022 to allow residential mixed use up to seven stories. The zoning allows for up to 235 units. Legacy Custom Homes is also building 22 homes within the Budley East developments in the Oberlin neighborhood of Raleigh. Kate Tracy writes the retail and restaurant section of the TBJ. Her main story this week, Downtown Cary adds a touch of the beach. Cary has another new bar surfing into downtown. The Beach House by Tiki Brewing opened November 22nd at 232 East Chatham Street, serving craft beer and cocktails. Vicious Fishes Brewery, with locations in Apex, Cary, Fuquay, Verena, and Anger, announced its latest collaboration with Tiki Brewing on the project in an Instagram post. Although brewing is in the name of the business, the establishment will not be brewing any beer at the location. Whether you're craving that beachy tropical vibe or just need an escape from the everyday, the Beach House has you covered. With our laid-back atmosphere and island-inspired vibes, it's the perfect place to soak up the sun or shade and sample the best brews around, the Beach House by Tiki Brewing posted on Instagram. Aspire Construction Management was the general contractor on the project, and New City Design Group was the architect. Wayne Holt with Main Street Dreams, LLC, is the property owner of 232 East Chatham Street. It last sold in 2022 for $500,000, according to Wake County property records. Cary is seeing plenty of new retailers on Chatham Street. The team behind the Mayton Hotel, including developers Jordan Gusenhoven, Bill Zahn, and Early Bird Night Owl CEO Craig Spitzer, now has plans to turn the Gherkins Downtown Auto Repair Shop into a restaurant. The Milkshake Factory at 161 East Chatham Street is coming soon, a few blocks away from the new Tiki Bar. That growth has only accelerated after the opening of the downtown Cary Park in November 2023. The opening of the park followed decades of planning by the town on how to add more walkable amenities to the heart of the community. The other Tiki Bar news across the triangle, the Ark Royal Bar recently closed in Raleigh's Glenwood South ahead of the redevelopment of the Creamery building. Meanwhile, Octun Coffee and Bar recently opened in Durham, serving coffee, tiki cocktails, and Mexican cuisine. In Fenton, Crawford Steakhouse now looks to December opening. Scott Crawford's newest addition to the Triangle's culinary scene is getting close to the finish line. Crawford Brothers Steakhouse, located at 401 in Fenton, is aiming to open during the week of December 16th. Crawford recently said final inspections were taking place to secure a certificate of occupancy. I don't want to jinx it. Things can go sideways pretty quickly with construction, but we're almost at the finish line, he said. Meanwhile, the restaurant has revealed details about its menu. The raw and chilled items include an Ocetra caviar parfait served with house potato chips, cream fraiche and chives, as well as a hamachi crudo with white shoyu, chili, lime, peanuts, and cilantro. The steakhouse menu features prime black Angus and Wagyu steaks, and the restaurant will have its own dry aging room. The restaurant started the build-out on its 4,500-square-foot restaurant earlier this year. Maurer Architecture designed the new restaurant. Indoors, the new restaurant can seat 120 people, and a private dining room seats 24 people. Builder sees quick leasing in new Cary property. Local Cary development firm Sunhouse Development Company has its hands full with commercial projects in the Triangle. In addition to a retail project in Apex, Sunhouse has broken ground on a two-story office and retail building in Cary. The shops at Twyla Walk will be an 18,000-square-foot office and retail building located at 2301 Corley Road in Cary. The site is near Morrisville Parkway and Interstate 540. President Srikanth Kama has been working on the project since the pandemic. Stanley Martin is developing the residential portion of the Twyla project, bringing 179 townhomes to the site. Sunhouse is developing the commercial site. The two-story building will feature large floor-to-ceiling windows and a large outdoor balcony. The building will come with more than 70 parking spaces. "We will be 100% leased quickly," Kama said, adding that one end space is designed for an upscale food and beverage tenant. The shops at Twyla Walk is already under construction, with an expected delivery in July of 2025. Sunhouse Development Company is also developing a retail center at 8375 Green Level Church Road in the Apex and West Cary area. The site is at the corner with Green Level West Road, called Freedom Square. The center will have 30,000 square feet of retail space across three buildings. The Greater Triangle section of the TBJ is written by Ben Tobin. He tells us about more homes being planned for Chatham Park in Chatham County. As one of the biggest developments in the Triangle continues to gain momentum, it has announced its next major project. Preston Development Company of Cary is planning a more than 600-home neighborhood called Novi as part of the next phase of its North Village in Chatham Park, according to Vanessa Jenkins, Executive Vice President of Preston Development. "All of us have been talking about the North Village of Chatham Park forever," Jenkins said. "We have all this new stuff coming online next year, and the Novi area is an expanded piece of this." One of these developments opening next year is the $22 million YMCA at Chatham Park, a 34,000-square-foot facility that will include a wellness center, an outdoor pool, indoor and outdoor gymnasiums, and multi-purpose space. Jenkins said the facility will have a grand opening in March. As for Novi, home builders include TriPoint Homes of California, David Weekly Homes of Texas, and Triangle-based home builders Homes by Dickerson and Garman Homes. Jenkins said David Weekly Homes and Homes by Dickerson will do single-family detached homes for the neighborhood. TriPoint Homes will do townhomes, and Garman Homes will do a mix of single-family detached homes and cottages. The first homes in the neighborhood should be available for move-in next summer, according to Jenkins. Full build-out is estimated to take around 2 years. Novi is the latest in a series of major announcements for Chatham Park, a more than 7,000-acre mixed-use development in the Pittsburgh area. The Chatham County project made national headlines last year when Story Living by Disney announced it would build a community there. The community called Asteria is a new business venture from the Walt Disney Company and will include 4,000 single-family and multifamily homes. Per Preston Development, the first home sales for the community will start in 2027. Additionally, a 120-room Hampton Inn hotel opened earlier this month at Mosaic, a mixed-use development off Highway 501 north of Pittsburgh. In New Hanover County, a Raleigh firm sells coastal apartments for a big price. A Raleigh firm has sold a relatively new luxury apartment building at the coast for an eye-popping price. Pier 33, a 286-unit apartment complex located at 901 Nutt Street in downtown Wilmington, sold for a little more than $85.3 million on November 22nd. According to New Hanover County deed records. The buyer is Middle Street Partners of South Carolina, according to John Michaels, a managing director with JLL who worked on the deal. The seller is an LLC tied to Raleigh's DeWitt Carolinas, which led the development of the apartment building. DeWitt Carolinas, excuse me, purchased the 4.83 acres the apartment complex now sits on in 2014 for $7 million, according to new Hanover County deed records from the time. DeWitt Carolinas, led by CEO Todd Said, is developing the Exchange Raleigh project that includes the 1,000 social building. The complex offers units ranging from studios to three-bedroom apartments. Pier 33 opened in late 2020. Per the apartment complex's website, rental rates start at just over $900 per month, with apartments ranging anywhere from 582 square feet to 1,642 square feet. In Johnston County, builder pays $2 million for land and plans 246 homes. A Raleigh home builder active throughout the Triangle has gobbled up dozens of acres in Johnston County tagged for future housing development. An LLC tied to New Home Inc. purchased a little more than 40 acres near the intersection of Strickland and Swift Creek Roads in the town of Wilson's Mills for a little under $2 million, according to Johnston County deed records. The seller, R.A. Lee Properties of Clayton, purchased the land in 2019 for a little more than $492,000. Representatives of New Home, Inc. did not respond to requests seeking comment. According to Johnston County land records, the property is zoned for mixed-use development. It was previously zoned for agricultural use. According to documents submitted to the town of Wilson's Mills earlier this year, the company plans to build a total of 246 single-family attached and detached homes. A construction timeline and home pricing have not been disclosed. Plans for new homes in Johnston County are nothing new, as Wake County's eastern neighbor is bursting at the seams with people moving into it. The county had just shy of 242,000 residents as of July 2023, according to the most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. It had less than 169,000 residents in 2010. The final reporter page is On the Coast, written by David Pertell. In Wilmington, apartments sold for $48 million. A brand new multifamily community in Wilmington sold for more than $47 million. RAS Realty Partners, a Florida-based investment and development company, acquired the Beaumont Oaks at Porter's Neck Apartments in Wilmington for $47.92 million, according to the Raleigh-based Deaton/GREA, the brokerage that represented the seller. The community is off of Highway 17, and it was developed and sold by North Carolina-based Logan Developers, Inc. The developer started construction in 2021. The community was fully opened in 2023 and is now 87% leased. RAS Realty Partners previously acquired a 34-townhome community, the Reserve at Beaumont Oaks, for $15.25 million. It was also developed and sold by Logan Developers and is part of the Beaumont Oaks community. RAS Realty had tried to buy the apartments before, but faced challenges that forced them to walk away. It's a competitive market, but knowing that this buyer was already somewhat involved, because they already had the townhomes, it felt like it was the right thing to do to give him another chance because they had tried to close it years ago. It felt good that they got the deal because they had tried so hard for it in the past, and it wasn't their fault. They weren't able to get it over the finish line at a time of tumultuous lending situation. It's kind of reuniting them, and it made sense, said Andrew Smith, director at Deaton GREA. There are 204 units spread across 11 buildings with 1, 2, and 3-bedroom options. Monthly rental rates range from $1,299 to $1,899. The apartments have open floor plans with 9-foot ceilings, stainless steel appliances, granite countertops, dual sinks in primary bathroom, in-unit washer and dryer, and private balconies or patios. Residents enjoy access to saltwater swimming pool with sun deck, grilling stations, covered pavilion with fireplace, pet park, pet spa, playground, fitness center, business center, and recreation space with pool tables. Andrew Smith and Michael Deaton with Deaton GREA represented the seller in the off-market transaction. Evan Barton, Ross Tomaselli, and Max Smith of Cadence Realty Corp. represented the buyers. Fifth Third Bank targets the Port City. A Midwest bank that's been growing rapidly in the Triangle is now eyeing the coast. Fifth Third Bank has opened a new branch in Wilmington at 5201 College Road in the Myrtle Grove area. This marks the Cincinnati Bank's first retail branch in the city. With the move, Fifth Third enters one of the fastest-growing markets in the country. It mirrors the bank's rapid expansion in the Triangle, where it is betting big on a strong retail presence by opening more than 25 branches since 2020. And as with the Triangle, the bank is targeting in-migration on the coast as Midwesterners and people from the Northeast pour into North Carolina. The Wilmington branch property was formerly a SunTrust location and is now listed for sale for $4 million. It's more than 3,800 square feet and sits on more than a one-acre lot. Beach Town is among the most expensive in the United States. Kill Devil Hills and many other smaller communities across the country have home prices similar to those found in large cities, a new study found. The Lending Tree study set out to determine the most expensive small towns in America and using U.S. Census data analyzed communities with populations under 50,000. Kill Devil Hills ranks 13th in the U.S. for median home value with a figure of $386,600. While the community is full of multi-million dollar beach homes catering to the luxury market, smaller condo units can be found for well below $500,000. The most expensive town on the list is Vineyard Haven, Massachusetts, where the median home value is just shy of $1 million. Jackson, Wyoming is number two at $847,000, followed by the ski resort of Breckenridge, Colorado at $760,000. The next most expensive town in North Carolina on the list is Brevard, located in the mountains south of Asheville. Median home values there were about $300,000, according to the study. The North Carolina coast has been growing rapidly in recent years due to in-migration. People from out of state, particularly the Northeast, have been moving to the coast in droves. The wider Wilmington area is now one of the fastest-growing places in the country. Let's turn now to the cover story this week. Business Person of the Year, the Eclectic Epicurean. Restaurateur Georgios Bakatsias is Triangle Business Journal's 2024 Business Person of the Year. If anyone can make residents of suburban Cary feel like they're feasting with the gods on Mount Olympus, it's Georgios Bakatsias. He's standing in his newest restaurant, Neos Hellenic Cuisine, observing the finishing touches inside the 10,000-square-foot space as it prepares to open. When he came into the building on a previous night, the tall wooden column surrounding the main dining area had felt all wrong to him, too heavy and too dark. Now, at his request, painters are rolling on a coat of white primer before they'll paint the columns white to brighten the room. Later, they'll add the Grecian key pattern around the bottom of the columns and stencil on the top to finish the look. It's just one of many details Bakatsias has his hands in as Naos gets ready to welcome its first guests. There's also the permitting, menu development, finding the right towels, ordering the glassware, and much more. He oversees it all. The last 10 to 20% of a project, you've got to be relentless, day and night, Bakatsias says. Formerly the Asian restaurant Koan, Bakatsias is reimagining the venue as one that pays homage to ancient Hellas in design and cuisine. A floor-to-ceiling mural of the goddess Athena greets guests as they enter. Dozens of antiquity-themed vases adorn the shelves, as do paintings, photos, and murals depicting scenes from ancient and modern Greece. Named after the Greek word for temple, Naos is intended to be a sanctuary for guests enjoying traditional Greek dishes prepared in an elevated fashion. Of course, there's also a cellar for wine, lots of wine. Over time, Bakatsias plans to spend $250,000 or more filling the cellar with thousands of wines from across the Mediterranean. He epitomizes what a Greek is like in his ability to grasp ideas and concepts and convert them into real, touchable, loving things, said Art Pappas, managing partner of Durham's Pappas Capital and an investor in Naos. He's just a master of it, and it speaks to his heritage, his experience, and his love of food and people. Born and raised in a remote Greek village lacking in modern amenities, Bakatsias has traveled far and wide, including a formative stint in Paris, to develop his love of food and people. And yet the Triangle is his home base. After going on a restaurant opening spree the last 2 years, Naos will be Bakatsias' 20th restaurant currently in operation at the 900-employee Georgios Hospitality and Lifestyle Group. It's the third he's opened this year alone. Last year I opened 6-7 different concepts. It was intense. I drove the company crazy, he said. It's not a normal pace, not even for the jovial, energetic Bokatsias, but the quiet of the pandemic gave him the time to envision and execute new ideas. Now these new venues are coming to fruition. Quantity is one thing, but longevity is another entirely, and Bokatsias has long played a critical role in the Triangle's restaurant scene. He estimates that 10 of his restaurants have been around for at least 15 years, and some, such as Durham's Parizade, double that. That's a long life for restaurants, the 68-year-old said. Yet at a time when operating a restaurant is harder and more expensive than ever, Bokatsias has kept growing, keeping the magic of hospitality alive. He now boasts more than $22 million in annual revenue from his multiple restaurants. That growth and resilience is why Triangle Business Journal has named him the 2024 Business Person of the Year, an honor he shares with past CEOs and leaders throughout the region. Bill and Ashley Hawkins, friends and investors in Bokatsias' recent three-restaurant expansion to Wilmington, say he's had a noticeable effect on the coastal town. Not only are residents excited about the new eatery options, but he's making other existing restaurants improve. He doesn't just know how to cook. He also knows how to entertain and create an experience, Ashley Hawkins said. Bokatsias' reputation has traveled far and wide. Celebrated Triangle chef Scott Crawford knew of Bokatsias 20 years before he ever met him or even lived in the Raleigh area. Now the pair have known each other for a decade and have deepened their friendship in recent years. He's the most prolific restaurateur the Triangle has ever seen. He takes risks no one else takes. He has shown me what's possible, Crawford said. Those of us, like me, who aspire to experiment with different concepts and introduce different concepts to our community. It's risky, it's scary, but he gives people like me courage and the understanding that it's possible. At the heart of Greek culture is philoxenia, an ancient and sacred concept that roughly translates to friend to a stranger. From Homer's epics to modern-day chefs operating restaurants across the diaspora, Greeks believe in welcoming strangers and treating them with honor. Nikos, Bokatsias' restaurant in Durham, explains philoxenia extensively on its website and the integral role the philosophy had for the Bokatsias family. Georgios Bokatsias has been perfecting the art of philoxenia since he was a small child. Growing up in the remote Greek village of Caritsa, Bokatsias understood what survival was to its core. There was no electricity. Horses and donkeys were the main transportation. Villagers grew and raised all their own food, including cheese, olive oil, and vegetables. His first pets were pigeons, and he played soccer with paper balls. Bokatsias' mother toiled in the fields from 5 a.m. until nighttime. But no matter how tired she would create a feast for visitors out of seemingly nothing. Well, maybe one eggplant, her son fondly quips. His mother's love for cooking and her connection to ingredients remains his greatest culinary influence. I grew up in a village with a lot of powerful women. The women there carried swords and knives, he said. While he's pursued other physical endeavors like Pilates later in life, Bokatsias started running marathons when he was 14. I was training in the village up and down the mountains, and the old people thought I went crazy, he said. Bokatsias has since traveled the world and eaten at the best of restaurants. His restaurants are a reflection of his wide-ranging love of different cuisines, including French, Italian, Spanish, Asian, and steakhouses. But as a culinary Odysseus, he has journeyed back home to the food of his youth. Naos, in addition to his other successful Greek eateries, is part of that homecoming. He feels most at home at a peasant table underneath the grapevines where he and his neighbors share a meal of vegetables from the garden. Zucchini blossoms, wood-fired meat, phyllo pies with fresh cheese, eggplant dishes, and slow-roasted potatoes. The food was divine, so it still evokes all my palate and my excitement, Bokatsias said. Hospitality, xenophilia, is something that is ingrained in the culture at all of his restaurants. He notices cleanliness and organization and checks his restaurants before they open to see how his staff cleaned up the night before. He notices when there's no music playing or even when a flower is dead. There's no groundbreaking system or class he teaches on hospitality. Rather, it's the small things taught day in and day out. It's an everyday love affair, Bokatsias says. In 1951, Bakatsis's father fled Greece after political unrest and moved to Newbern, where he had a community of friends and family to join. Bakatsis didn't meet his father until he was a toddler. Bakatsis's two older brothers followed their father to North Carolina, and then years later, he and his sister Olga joined. The youngest Bakatsis and his family lived in a two-bedroom apartment above the Durham Diner they operated. The diner served meatloaf, fried chicken, collard greens, egg dishes for breakfast, and more. Georgios Bakatsis was the dishwasher and cleaner. He'd find many lost quarters in the booth from guests trying to play a song on the jukebox. At 12 years old, he remembers working three jobs at once. He saved up enough money to journey to Paris as a teenager. He stayed in luxury hotels and ate at high-end restaurants, so he could only afford to stay for a week. After his village upbringing, he yearned for the elegance and romance of Paris offered and the fine dining of France. In college, Bakatsis played soccer, center midfielder, at Elon University for a semester and also at Appalachian State University for a year, but he never finished his college education. "I realized the value of school, but going into business for me was more relevant," he said. He never went to culinary school either. Instead, he opened his first restaurant in his early 20s. A retired Durham chef helped him with the basics of cooking, cleanliness, and organization. Bakatsis was doing all the cooking himself and could only afford to hire one other cook to produce the classic French-style dishes. Times have changed since then. Opening a restaurant then cost $50 or $60 per square foot. Now Bakatsis is lucky if he can do it for $200 per square foot. While not all of his restaurants today are profitable, the majority are, and some are extremely profitable, picking up the slack from the others that need a bit more time to get there. What's next for Bakatsis? Next year, Bakatsis says he's going to rest, although his colleagues will believe it when they see it. He wants to spend more time traveling in Europe and perhaps write another book. Bakatsis has already written one book called Nymphs in the Garden. He described it as part memoir, part lifestyle book with family photographs, and 250 pages of written content. He hopes to release it next year. Despite past relationships, Bakatsis is never married, although he says he's open to that now. Bakatsis has built a strong network of restaurants over the span of his career. Who's to continue that when he's gone? Bakatsis has nieces and nephews, one of whom works with him on restaurant design, but he thinks about Igor Gesina and Jason Lawless, general manager and chef at Parizade. "They deserve that restaurant more than anybody because they put their work into it," he said. And then there's Matthew Kelly at Vin Rouge, a chef who worked for Bakatsis relentlessly for 8 years. He earned every bit of his 20% ownership in the restaurant, according to Bakatsis. He looks to chefs like him as the future of his company. Jay Median serves as the company's chief financial officer and one of its partners. Bakatsis said he's a dear friend and business partner, as well as the brilliant stability for the company. Opening new restaurants involves significant outlay. Total investment in Neos, for example, was $1.5 million. Bakatsis paid a $25,000 security deposit and a $23,000 in prepaid rent to the landlord. For the first 5 years, base rent for the new restaurant is $17,000 per month, or 6.5% of monthly sales, whichever is greater, according to the lease. When it comes to himself, Bakatsis does not have much of an endgame in sight, especially not retirement. "That's ridiculous," he said. At the end of 2020, Bakatsis closed Kipos Greek Taverna at its former location on Chapel Hill's Franklin Street, after the new landlords were not willing to negotiate a deal. Instead, he had a vision for a new restaurant down a forgotten alley between an Aldi and a Dollar Tree in the Eastgate shopping mall. "I took the worst location I had, and I said, I want to make it the best location," he said. "My friends make fun of it, and then they turn the corner and go inside, and they say, oh, I see." Outside, along the alley wall, a quote from Greek writer Nikos Kantzenzakis adorns the outdoor alley. "I hope nothing, I fear nothing, I am free." One night after 7 p.m., Bakatsis has just finished eating and checking in with his staff at Kipos when he exited his restaurant and walked along the alley. A man approached, and Bakatsis greeted him with his crinkly smile and embrace as if they're the oldest of friends. Bakatsis asked the man if he'd like some soup, and the man said he would. Bakatsis hustled back inside to retrieve the meal, brought it out, and joyfully handed it over. There was no expectation of payment, no strings attached, no judgment. There was simply a man in need of soup, and a man more than willing to give it to him. Philoxenia. The editor's notebook column this week is related to the cover story, so I'll read that. Rebecca Troyer is the editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. How we choose our business person of the year. Each fall, the Triangle Business Journal newsroom undertakes the lengthy process of selecting our business person of the year. This year, we started with an initial pool of 30-plus names and discussed each candidate with respect to several key factors: a demonstrated history of business growth and success, the overall impact on the Triangle's brand, the candidate's contributions to important local causes, and his or her status as a 2024 newsmaker. We then whittled the list down to a half a dozen and continued our jury room-like deliberations. In the end, it was a unanimous decision. Georgios Bokatsias would be our 2024 Business Person of the Year. Bokatsias' work in the restaurant industry began as a youth, as the family was immersed in his father's Durham diner. His first job was washing dishes. Now he oversees culinary operations at 20 Restaurant Empire with $22 million in annual revenue. In between were a long series of concepts and ventures, not all of which were successful. But as any profitable business owner knows, no matter what the sector, mistakes and missteps are often the secret to longevity. Bokatsias has learned what resonates with his customers, and the popularity of his restaurants across the Triangle are the proof. The rich Greek heritage and culture he brings to his craft, coupled with his joyous desire to spread hospitality through a shared love of food, are part of the magic. But he's so much more than a chef. Behind the open arms and infectious smile is the shrewd business acumen of a seasoned entrepreneur who knows to a penny what he's spending to create the ideal environment for diners at every new restaurant he opens, and how he can turn that investment into a profitable operation. Bokatsias supports local nonprofits, including his favorite, the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham. He also opens his home and cooking to charity dinners with the same exuberance he has for his regular customers. Over the years, TBJ has recognized impressive leaders in traditional sectors, real estate and development, technology and biotech, finance and banking, as recipients of this annual honor. Only once before has a restaurateur risen to the top, Ashley Christensen in 2014. The restaurant business is crushingly demanding, and we've seen many good restaurants or many good establishments come and go in the intervening decade. On top of the regular challenges of keeping the doors open and the customers flowing, the pandemic dealt a harsh blow to many local eateries. Those who have not only survived but thrived are in a unique class, and serial restaurateurs like Bokatsias are at the top of that class. When they succeed, the greater community benefits. Eclectic restaurants offering a diverse array of culinary experiences help make the Triangle an attractive place to live and work, and Bokatsias is a major contributor to that vibe. We look forward to seeing what's next on the menu of his colorful life. You can reach Ms. Troyer at rtroyer at bizjournals.com. That's R-T-R-O-Y-E-R at biz, B-I-Z, journals.com. We also have a guest editorial this week, this one by frequent contributor John Hood. New import taxes are a bad bet. This concerns the pending tariffs from the Trump administration. During his 2024 campaign, Donald Trump promised sky-high tariffs on products from China and across-the-board taxes on imports from elsewhere. Now President-elect Trump has already pitched the idea of levying 25% taxes on Mexican and Canadian imports to the U.S., blaming those governments for failing to arrest the cross-border flow of illicit drugs and illegal immigrants. Many of his defenders, including his designee for Treasury Secretary, South Carolinian Scott Bessent, argue that Trump is really a free trader at heart, that his threatened taxes on imports merely represent a tactic to draw reluctant trading partners to the negotiating table. I sincerely hope they're right, because our state has a lot to lose if the new administration's tax policies provoke a trade war. Many of our fellow North Carolinians work in sectors such as agriculture, life sciences, information technology, textiles, and finance that export goods and services around the world. That the policy will raise consumer prices is not in dispute. That's what tariffs are for. Taxing imports makes them less appealing, giving domestic producers a chance to compete for customers in the higher prices. For protectionists, that's the end of the story. They believe Americans are better off paying higher prices over time because Americans will also earn higher wages from the domestic producers enjoying higher domestic sales. Their proposition is at best debatable. Workers protected in this way form a small subset of American consumers as a whole, for example, but at least it is clearly stated and testable. The alternative view offered by Bessent and others is that threatening to raise import taxes will reduce rather than increase prices in the long run by forcing other countries to lower trade barriers. This proposition is harder to evaluate empirically, in part because the implied gap in time between tariffs raised and trade deals negotiated could be months, years, or even decades. Still, I submit that best available evidence suggests neither defense of import taxes is sound. Cato Institute scholar Scott Linsiome and his peers recently examined more than a dozen empirical studies of the first Trump administration's trade policies. Estimates of the pain vary depending on what aspect of the Trump tariffs was studied, they wrote, but it's clear that Americans face significant losses from the tariffs and inevitable foreign retaliation, including higher tax burdens and prices, loss in wages and employment, reduced consumption, decreased investment, a decline in exports and overall aggregate welfare. Historical examples of successful protectionism are also far less common than proponents claim. A new National Bureau of Economic Research paper by economists from the University of California, Davis, and Britain's University of Sussex take a close look at tariff rates and the performance of American manufacturing from 1870 to 1909. They found that import taxes lowered American productivity and tended to reflect successful lobbying by special interest groups. The era's high tariffs are unlikely to have helped the U.S. become a globally competitive manufacturer, the authors concluded. The new administration appears to be betting on a different outcome this time. For North Carolina, the stakes couldn't be higher. You can reach John Hood at jhood@johnlocke.org. That's John, L-O-C-K-E.org. This week's Project Life story, Executive Health and Worker Wellness in Triangle, is about a new way to spur stroke recovery. An emerging surgery and rehab program at Wake Med is helping stroke survivors regain hand and arm mobility even years after their stroke occurred. The article is written by Connie Gentry. 6 years after having a stroke at age 39, the first patient to undergo vagus nerve stimulation, that's VNS surgery and rehabilitation at Wake Med, was finally ready to play fetch with her dog. She was among the roughly 60% of stroke survivors who continue to have persistent impairment and weakness in hand and arm for years following a stroke. Regaining mobility and strength so she could toss her dog a toy was just part of her motivation that carried her through months of outpatient rehab. Wake Med, the only medical center in the Triangle that performs VNS surgery, did his first procedure in March when a neurosurgeon implanted the small pacemaker-like transponder under the skin in the patient's chest and tunneled a lead from the neurostimulator to the vagus nerve. Dr. Robert Dalla Piazza with Raleigh Neurosurgical leads the functional neurosurgery program at Wake Med and performs the VNS procedures. The surgery, typically conducted as an outpatient procedure and completed in under 2 hours, is the easy part for the patient. Intense occupational therapy, 90-minute outpatient sessions 3 times a week for at least 6 weeks, plus 4 hours of home-based exercises daily are the bigger challenges. But that diligent work is also what helps stroke survivors who have persistent impairment in their upper limbs regain hand and arm function. The traditional therapy session is about 45 minutes, so this is a pretty intense program during which therapists have the ability to manually stimulate the patient through the VNS transponder, much like a clicker on a PowerPoint presentation, said Amber Lewis, an occupational therapist in Wake Med outpatient neurorehabilitation. The patient doesn't feel any sensation from the stimulation, but activating the vagus nerve enhances recovery in the brain. At home, the patient swipes a magnet over the VNS device and then does 30 minutes of prescribed exercise. The expectation is for patients to do 8 swipes a day for a total of 4 hours of exercise and working up 400 to 500 repetitions per movement. Quickly discernible results and continued progress are what keep stroke survivors committed to this arduous process. With VNS rehab, the goal is for patients to be able to resume the little activities of daily living they had normally done before the stroke, things like brushing their teeth, buttoning a shirt, or putting on a pair of pants. Our first patient went home, went from hardly being able to use her hand. She could close but not open her hand, and she didn't have the ability to isolate her fingers. Also, she had a lot of shoulder pain, but said her arm didn't feel like it was part of her body. Now she can turn on a light switch, open the door, and play with this horse of a dog she has, Lewis said. When she was discharged from outpatient rehab in mid-November, the patient had celebrated not only her 45th birthday, but also the return of some fine motor dexterity, able to pick up and place small pegs. We have had 7 additional VNS surgeries since March. 2 more are currently scheduled, and at least 15 are in the insurance approval process, said Michelle Gerald-Lemon, a patient navigator in the WakeMed stroke program. UNC Health and Duke Health have referred patients for VNS rehab, she said, and added, we're also working with ECU Health, First Health in Pinehurst, Moses Kona in Greensboro, and we may begin supporting Carilion Hospital in Roanoke, Virginia. Survivors who have reached the chronic phase of a stroke, which generally occurs approximately 6 months post-stroke and is characterized by continued upper extremity impairment after having plateaued in their rehab progress, may be eligible for VNS. But VNS rehab has also proved effective for individuals for years, even decades post-stroke, but continued to have limited hand and arm function. The outcomes following VNS rehab are both life-changing and long-term, but awareness of the program and insurance approvals are just gaining traction, although Medicare and Medicaid have both approved the procedure. Because it's so new in North Carolina, we're charting new territory for a lot of insurances. The first person that we evaluated was in August of 2023, but he didn't get everything approved to have the surgery until April, and that was with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, Gerald Lemon said. However, the second BCBSNC insured patient was able to get approval for the procedure in about 2 months. Wake County is unique in that we have a large stroke population. In 2023, there were 4,804 patients that are working or worked up for a stroke or TIA at Wake Med. 2/3 of those ruled in as a stroke, so we had a total of 2,458 stroke patients, not including TIAs last year, Gerald Lemon said. Transient ischemic attacks, TIAs, are commonly referred to as warning strokes by the American Heart Association. Typically, we're admitting people into the rehab hospital about 10 or 11 days after they had their stroke, and the average stay is about 3 weeks, said Elisa Dunn, manager of therapy services at WakeMed Rehab Hospital and stroke specialty program director. We're seeing 30- and 40-year-olds regularly come through the hospital, and the more active, fit, and independent anybody was before they had a stroke, the better their recovery potential. Of the 1,500 to 1,600 patients admitted annually to the WakeMed Rehab Hospital, more than 25% are recovering from a stroke. Stroke is a very prevalent diagnosis, so we need to be really good at serving those folks, Dunn said. We have a robotic walking program from Exobionics. That's another game-changer for our stroke patients. It literally attaches like Velcro to their body, and a therapist helps control the device so it provides the level of support they need while also allowing them to do whatever they can and get more steps in. It speaks to neuroplasticity and building movement patterns in the brain, but it also takes away a little bit of the fear because patients can't fall. Of the 412 stroke patients admitted to the WakeMed Rehab Hospital last year, 98% met their expected discharge goals and 86% were discharged back into the community to their home or an assisted living rest home or shelter. North Carolina had the 5th highest rate of stroke deaths in the nation in 2022, according to the Centers for Disease Control, and strokes are increasingly impacting younger adults. Specific to WakeMed, 41% of the stroke patients last year were under the age of 65. 7% were between the ages of 19 and 44, and stroke survivors represent the largest patient population at the rehab hospital. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of the fight for better health in our workplaces. Triangle's largest law firm is expanding into City Club Raleigh's downtown space. Major changes are occurring at the top of the former Wells Fargo Capital Center in downtown Raleigh as an exclusive social club prepares to close. The top two floors of 150 Fayetteville Street, floors 28 and 29, have been home to City Club Raleigh for more than a decade. Now the floors will be occupied by Smith Anderson, a law firm that has been on Fayetteville Street for 100 years. Byron Kirkland, managing partner with Smith Anderson, said the firm has outgrown its current five floors in the building and that the additional two will allow it to grow. Other locations in downtown are amazing, but given Highwood's investment in Fayetteville Street in this building, we've been in downtown 100 of our 112-plus years of existence on Fayetteville Street. So we wanted to recommit to that and help revitalize downtown, Kirkland said. It's being revitalized, but I'm excited about the energy and vibrancy here and wanted to commit for the long haul. We have 250-plus employees downtown, and we're all excited to be down here for a much longer period of time. Highwoods Properties is still working to fill the 60,000 square feet that Wells Fargo left, but it opened Birdie's Bar Room and Kitchen on the ground floor in October. Across the street, Diced is open, and Primo Hoagies and Insomnia Cookies will open soon. Smith Anderson, the Triangle's largest law firm, renewed its current 91,988 square feet and added 20,339 square feet in a 10-plus year lease. The lease comes with signage rights for the building. City Club chose to not renew its lease, according to Highwood's Chief Operating Officer Brian Leary. The club sent a note to members on December 4th that it would close permanently on December 31st. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.